Despite all the attention focused on Iran and its potential for building nuclear weapons, the fact remains that the only power in the Middle East that has nuclear weapons is Israel. But how much is really known about the Israeli nuclear program? KGVM contributor David Rosenberg spoke with longtime activist and writer John Steinbach, the co-founder of the Hiroshima-Nagasaki Peace Committee of the National Capital Area, when the fighting between Israel and Iran first started, before the U.S. bombed Iranian nuclear sites, and before the ceasefire was announced.
There's some controversy about exactly how many nuclear weapons Israel has. What's your sense of that? Is it 100? Is it closer to 400? Or somewhere in between?
The estimates range from 80. Federation of American Scientists says 80. Others, Seymour Hersh and others, say up to 500. My position is it really doesn't make a difference. According to Frank Barnaby and Ted Taylor, Israel has nuclear weapons. It probably has neutron bombs. And it has miniaturized nukes. It has ballistic missiles that can reach Moscow. The Jericho 3 can reach New York City. And it has five or six German submarines. And it has bombers that can target the entire Middle East. So considering that one tiny primitive nuclear bomb detonated over Hiroshima killed approximately 200,000 people and obliterated all structures from ground zero out to 2.5 kilometers, and that the modern weapons are 10 times and 100 times and even 1,000 times bigger than that, I don't think it really matters whether Israel has 80 or whether it has 500.
And yet all the talk in the Western media is about the possibility of Iran gaining a nuclear weapon. Why do you think that is?
Well, Iran has is a signatory to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, which obliges it not to have nuclear weapons. It has repeatedly said that it does not want to have nuclear weapons. Furthermore, it joined the joint JCPOA, the Iran Nuclear Agreement, which further opened up its facilities. So the IAEA had access to virtually all of Iran's military facilities. And, you know, there's great suspicion in Iran right now that the IAEA spies basically gave Israel a lot of targeting information. So Iran is the most examined, most studied nation on the earth regarding its nuclear program. And Israel is not a signatory to the NPT. And basically, there's no oversight at all. So it's absolutely the height of hypocrisy that the villain here is Iran because of some theoretical possibility that it might have nukes, whereas Israel has an entire arsenal of sophisticated modern hydrogen bombs.
So decades have passed and the U.S. has known about the Israeli nuclear program and yet hasn't really done anything about it, although, as some people have pointed out, the Kennedy administration did try to do something or was thinking of doing something about it. So why haven't U.S. leaders taken a stronger action about this?
Yeah, not just Kennedy, Eisenhower as well. When Israel built Dimona, or the French built Dimona for Israel, Eisenhower was very, very concerned about it. And he and Kennedy had conferences about it. And it was a number one priority of both Eisenhower and Kennedy that Israel never get nuclear weapons. And so Israel agreed to the U.S. sending an inspection team to Dimona. And so the team went there. Unbeknownst to them, Israel had purchased an entirely new second control center, which they installed and in order to try to persuade the visiting Americans that it was a civilian program and not a nuclear program. So Israel went to extreme lengths, but then Kennedy was assassinated. Johnson came to power. Johnson was much more friendly, much more ambivalent about the nuclear program. And then Golda Meir and Nixon made the deal that resulted in what we have today, which is what Israel calls nuclear ambiguity. But it's an open secret, and everyone knows about Israel's nuclear weapons.
So on the issue of Israel kind of playing the U.S. On the issue or even blackmailing the U.S., what would you say about that?
Well, so Shimon Peres, who was, could be considered the father of the Israeli bomb, he and David Bergman were the two founders back in the late 1940s. He called this strategy of using the Israeli bomb a non-conventional compellent. And the idea was that Israel would use its nuclear weapons in order to coerce the surrounding nations, the Arab nations, to do what they wanted to do, and also to coerce the United States what it wanted to do. So Seymour Hersh, Mark Gaffney, and others have reported that in 1973, during the Israeli-Arab War, 1973, when Israel was on the verge of defeat, Israel used the threat of using nuclear weapons in order to compel, Kissinger and Nixon. And reluctantly, Kissinger and Nixon airlifted that material in. So it's fairly well documented. So Israel has a long history of using the threat of nukes, both against the United States and also against its surrounding neighbors, to basically to get what it wants.
So now we have, in recent days, the Israeli attack on Iran and Iran's response. Could this escalate into some sort of nuclear war, at least on the part of Israel?
Oh, yeah. No, it could easily. And as we're speaking, reports have come out that the United States has in the process, as we're talking in the air, has sent something like 40 to 60 large tanker planes to the Middle East, which would be used to fuel Israeli jets. So the great concern is the U.S. is going to involve itself directly in this war on behalf of Israel. And so this creates a situation which, in my opinion, brings us back to the 1962 and the Cuban Missile Crisis, and maybe even more acute, because back then, there was a red line between Kennedy and Khrushchev, and talks went on, and disaster was averted. And this time around, it's not clear to me, if the United States involves itself and Iran is facing an existential threat and deploys all of the ballistic missiles that apparently has against Israel, it would be devastating. I mean, we can see some results of the attack yesterday. It seems that Israel suffered some really, really major losses, including at least one major oil refinery. And that was just a preliminary exchange. So I think we're on the, both here and also in Ukraine, we're on in territory that we really haven't seen since 1962.
So you mentioned the planes, U.S. planes can refuel the Israeli jets. Is that similar to what the U.S. did for the Saudis when they were bombing Yemen?
Oh, yes. No, the U.S. has a long history of doing this. But what makes this different is, and these are reports that I'm reading right now within the last few hours, this is an unprecedented operation, sending these tanker planes to the Middle East. So hopefully it does not mean the U.S. is going to get involved. If the U.S. gets involved directly, then it's going to mean, essentially the closing of the Strait of Hormuz. It's going to put all of the oil facilities, Iranian and Saudi and all the Gulf states, all of the oil facilities in at risk. It'll result in, cataclysm in the financial markets. It'll result in God knows what oil crisis. So, and effectively will probably mean the end of the Trump presidency. And I know a lot of people, they don't like Trump, but this is a heck of a way to end it. And it could end it for all of us. That's the big problem.
Yeah, you'd think that Trump would want to be the deal maker here. And you'd think that maybe he would be pissed off at Israel for ruining the deal that he's trying to make with Iran. But that doesn't seem to be the case. What's going on there?
Well, he's brought a lot, like he did his first term. He's brought a lot of the neocons. He didn't bring in Bolton, but he brought in Rubio and Hegseth and a few others as well. So my guess is that saner voices in the Pentagon, because the Pentagon in these cases tends to be the saner voices, hopefully are on the phone with him and saying, you've got to back away, because this really is the precipice. This is the edge. Because if Iran falls, then Iran shares a 1,000-mile or so border with Russia, and it's going to be at the very least, very disadvantageous to Russia. And so I'm sure that Russia and China and India and others, Pakistan's Senate yesterday unanimously issued a statement saying that they stand in solidarity with and defense of Iran. So things have spiraled out of control, and we just hope that saner heads prevail. But, you know, essentially in Israel right now, we have what amounts to a rogue state that's run by devotees of Meir Kahana. So it's just not a very optimistic situation.
Is it true that some Israeli nuclear scientists are calling for the nuclear program to be shut down?
Well, several of the nuclear scientists over the years have expressed great skepticism of it. And, you know, Avner Cohen in particular wrote a book about it, about exposing the secrets. So, and Seymour Hersh wrote the book, The Samson Option. That's the definitive book on Israel's nuclear program. And he's unequivocal that, you know, it may in the beginning in Ben Gurion's and Peres's mind been that this is going to be the thing that's going to prevent another Holocaust, but he points out that it's vastly beyond that. And Israel has for 50 years now been using nuclear weapons as a part of their integrated policy, diplomatic and military policies. So this was entirely unavoidable. And I think a lot of us thought that it was just so crazy, the idea that Israel would attack Iran, that they would never do it. But here we are.
Yeah, it seemed like they were for years, or Netanyahu in particular was urging the U.S. to do it.
Yes, and that, well, it has been, attacking Iran from the beginning. I mean, that's been his whole policy, that and also the policy of, you know, trying to divide and conquer the Palestinians. It was Netanyahu and Likud that were largely responsible for, at least initially, you know, undercover supporting Hamas as a counter to Fatah, you know, and they were quite successful, I think, in dividing the Palestinian resistance in that way. And then, of course, just like the way that, you know, bin Laden blew up in the CIA's face, you know, Hamas has blown up in Israel's face. So there's that as well. I mean, it's a very difficult situation. Your listenership needs to understand how critical this situation is, and, you know, do what you can do, but don't be distracted. But this is a very serious, serious situation.
So it seems like the Israelis, or the leadership of Israel right now, thinks that they can just wipe out all enemies in one fell swoop and be done with the whole conflict. You get that impression?
Yeah. So, if you go back to the 1980s and 90s, Israel Shahak, back in those days, there was the Jerusalem Times was almost the only English language Israeli newspaper. And so Shahak would translate the Hebrew press, the Haaretz and the others as well. And he warned us back in the 80s and in the early 90s that some of the extremists, some of the religious extremists and political extremists, the Kahanists, if you will, were rapidly encroaching in the political leadership and also in the military leadership. So, I mean, the old Labor Party of, you know, Ben Gurion and Peres and so on, that functionally doesn't exist anymore. Today, it is the Likud party of the moderates, more or less, and you have these various Kahanist parties that occupy very high positions in the Israeli government. And for all practical purposes, Meir Kahana and his people are running Israel now, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's weird to think that the Likud are the moderates. I mean, that's where Menachem Begin and Yitzhak Shamir came out of, right? And they were in these organizations that were considered terrorists even by the mainstream Zionist movement, right?
Well, in Britain, King David Hotel and other things as well. But, you know, and so I try to tell family and friends that, you know, in some sense, you know, Netanyahu, it really is the moderate, because the people that he's made the deal with the devil with that are in his government, the Lieberman and Ben-Gvir and Smotrich and others that are even worse than they are. I mean, you know, these people are, you know, I mean, for all practical purposes, are unreconstructed fascists. And that also makes this a much more difficult situation because you have an Israeli government that's seemingly deranged, and then you've got the United States and Europe that are, largely seem to be, out of touch with reality. And it's not a good situation, not a healthy situation. And then, of course, there's always the situation in Ukraine, and how could that go? I mean, Ukraine attacks the Zaporizhzhia nuclear plant, and there's a massive meltdown. I mean, these are really dire times, and we need to focus on what the reality is. And we haven't even mentioned Gaza.
Yeah, so you think people's attention is shifting now?
Yeah, no, and this is all people need to understand. That they need to educate themselves about the nuclear program. I wrote a paper back in 2008 called Israel's Nuclear Program, and it's available in the Internet Archive site. So if you look up Steinbach and Israel's Nuclear Arsenal, quite a long paper. It's about 11,000 words and kind of will tell you everything you know from the beginning in 1948 to up to more or less the present day.
Right, yeah, you talked about the help that they got from the French and the South Africans later on, yeah.
This paper was paid for, so I have quite a library of books relating to the Israel's nuclear program, and it was paid for by the UAE, because it was the UAE government that came across an earlier paper of mine, and they commissioned me to write this paper, and I talked to some of my friends, Arjun Makajani in particular, and said, our nuclear energy security conference, and should I write it? And he encouraged me to do it, so I did, and it was well received in Abu Dhabi, and so it's still out there. I'm glad I had the opportunity to write it, and just I want to encourage the listeners, be informed, be aware of what's going on.
Maybe someone in the Trump administration will read it, who knows?
Like I said, I suspect people in the Pentagon are trying to get on the phone with Trump, and then there is Tulsi Gabbard, who I'm told is being vilified on MSNBC as being, a traitor and so on. But, she is, one of the few relatively sane voices, in my opinion. And she certainly is consciously aware of everything that we're talking about.
That's veteran activist and writer John Steinbeck speaking with KGVM contributor David Rosenberg. This interview was released on June 26th, 2025.